practices to people here.
I don't make anybody happy.
John DePietro on 1540 WADK.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host John DePietro.
Is Providence crime town?
Most definitely.
Well, folks, good afternoon on this sunny September 11th, Monday. Providence Journal had an interesting editorial. There's a lot in the news, especially next week with the General Assembly coming back into session. And joining us right now, he is the managing editor of OceanStateCurrent.com. It is Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John.
Justin, Providence Journal, I want to start off, had an editorial over the course of the weekend. And it basically really was starting to call out already, and no shortage of time. But already the Providence Journal has started to go after and had an editorial, Rhode Island taxpayers under attack. They say, this is the Providence Journal editorial now, never safe when the General Assembly is in session. This was yesterday's Sunday editorial. It appears special interests hope to use a session in the legislature, finally tree the dream of evergreen contracts. If they triumph over the common good, prepare to see cities and towns weakened at the bargaining table. Governor Gina Raimondo vetoed this legislation, which would mean that the public employees unions, that the contracts would never end. This really stemmed out of Warwick, where they could not come to an agreement between the school committee, superintendent, what have you, and the unions. And then it made its way up to the State House. It did pass. Basically, as the Journal writes out, the Lincoln Town Administrator, mayors of Warwick, Cranston, Pawtucket, North Providence, Cumberland, Johnston all talked about the dangers of it. But they're not done. The unions are rallying people to try to put together the votes to go around and override Governor Raimondo's veto of these, quote, evergreen contracts. I'd love you to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, with the session coming back, it's almost like waiting for a hurricane, isn't it? You know, you see how much damage the legislators do when they come back. You know, I was glad to see the Projo's editorial board take the stance, but it kind of puts them in the League of Cities, various mayors, versus the labor unions. I'm going to be pleasantly surprised if this doesn't go through. And it really is a shame. If you look back to this, all really started with East Providence kind of going against what had been the habit of just letting contracts keep going and then giving retroactive pay. They took the opportunity, what, 9 years ago or so, to say, well, your contract's expired, we're going to change the terms. And I haven't done a deliberative study of this, but it seems like we've had a lot fewer strikes and really hardcore battles between the unions and the schools since that happened. Warwick is kind of unique now. I mean, back then, it was five or six districts every year were striking or working to rule. This policy allowing at least the possibility that a school committee would say, you know what, if we don't have a contract, we're going to start changing the terms to our benefit. That's really kept some continuity and given a lot of incentive to the labor unions to actually come to an agreement, or at least to be more civil when they don't have an agreement. And that's going to change quite a bit, I think, if the veto is overridden.
Well, when you think about it, Justin, I mean, I think one of the high-profile examples of this was the situation in Providence with the firefighters, where, you know, they would keep track so many days without a contract. That was under Congressman, he was at the time Mayor Cicilline, but what they, no one would ever, you know, or they were kind of disingenuous, I think, with so many days without a contract. People think, how could they work without a contract? But the fact is, the contract they were under remained in existence. Unless you were going to negotiate a better contract, there would be no incentive at all to ever change the terms of the deal because the other one would just remain in existence. Now, Warwick, they've really had to take some drastic actions. They realized after all these years and declining population that they don't need three high schools. They don't need all these schools. I think the superintendent there, Thornton, you know, as he has pointed out, at one time, in 1969, Warwick had 19,000 students in their public schools. In 2017, it's under 9,000. And yet they've hired more teachers. They have more schools. It just doesn't make any sense. And Warwick's gone through, you know, they have schools, grammar schools, whatever, junior high, various schools in Warwick that are operating. There's only 30% capacity in the school. There's no reason to have, you know, when you only have 30% capacity in a school, it certainly makes sense to, you know, kind of merge them together. So there's been a lot of back and forth, and even in Warwick, which has been very contentious, where they can't even agree on the number of actual students in the school, with the superintendent saying that the union was exaggerating the actual number of students by 900. But I think this, as much as we hear of, you know, that the state is business unfriendly, the different mayors, I've had on Mayor Lombardi, Mayor Avedisian, Mayor Fung. Mayor Lombardi said that the mayor of Johnston said that if this goes through, you might as well just take the keys because there is no more negotiating. The only reason the union would ever agree to a new contract is if it's better than the current one that they have. So there would be no incentive for them to negotiate.
All right, exactly. I mean, if you think about this as policy, the idea that contracts keep going after they expire could, in theory, go either way. If the school district, if the school committee thinks they have a really good contract, they could be the ones stalling and keeping that contract in effect. The fact of the matter is there's no sign or evidence that Rhode Island's deterioration as a state and its student enrollment is going to turn around. So the pressure is all going to be on reducing the contracts, trying to do more with to accommodate fewer students, which is going to suggest lower expenditures for education, and that's going to put pressure on the contracts. And what this does is it's really going to start putting pressure on school committees to come up with ways that to save money and adjust that would actually hurt students more than would be the case if they could negotiate a contract that made sense with the union. So rather than having to fire teachers, maybe teachers would say, you know what, I'm going to have a lower course load, so I'll take a little bit of a hit on my health insurance or something like that. But yeah, that's not going to be in the cards because all they have to do is, as Warwick student population dwindles to 8,000, 5,000, 4,000, whatever, they're just going to be able to sit on their contract and say, hey, look, it's permanent. It's part of the law now. And if you think about it, they say a lot. You hear Bob Walsh of the NEA talking a lot. Well, this is just restoring the practice prior to East Providence when the courts stepped in. Well, the practice was that way because it didn't matter as much because Rhode Island was sort of treading water socially. Around that time of East Providence's ruling, we've been deteriorating so dramatically that that was going to happen eventually, whether it was East Providence or somewhere else. And we can't afford to be locking in labor contracts. But of course, that's what the unions want to do. And the unions, as some say, you know, runs the show at the State House.
Well, it's going to be, I mean, what does it say to the different mayors and town managers if, in fact, the General Assembly does it? Now, I would think it's going to be challenged because then they're basically overriding how the cities and towns operate by making this a state mandate. But if you go back to that famous, you know, 1991 Cianci administration, firefighters retiring with a 6% COLA, you have that, you know, that chief who right now his yearly pension is around $225,000. If he lives to be 100 years old, his pension will be $800,000 a year. As you know, Justin, I mean, everything has become about, really, it's COLAs and also health care costs. And there's no sense of where health care costs are going to go. And if you're a city or town that is locked in, as you just mentioned, Warwick, and the enrollment continues to decline, and yet they're stuck with this contract from another time, I just don't see how the cities and towns are going to, how they're going to survive, because no one in their right mind, you would never negotiate a contract that's going to be worse than the current one you have. And all we've seen the past few years from these different cities and towns is you went from, you know, firefighters, police, what have you, to not even to have to contribute towards the health care, to suddenly it's a very small percentage, and now it's going to be more than that. New people maybe go into a 401k, something like that. But, I mean, this is absolute, to me, this is kind of the death knell of the cities and towns. Because then this is going beyond tying the hands. These are handcuffs. This gives all of the bargaining power to the municipal workers and none to zero to the cities and towns, regardless and oblivious to what the changing landscape may be.
Oh, yeah, and what it'll mean is deteriorating services. I mean, our schools aren't exactly recognized across the country for a stellar performance, especially sitting right next to the number one in the country, Massachusetts. And if you look at roads and other infrastructure issues, we're not getting to basics because we're, at this point, our state has made its main purpose to be the support of insiders of one sort or another, the biggest group of which are government employees. And we need to change that around. I'm not optimistic. I mean, Speaker of the House Mattiello has spoken approvingly of this legislation, and we know Ruggiero is just a union guy.
Yeah.
And it did pass pretty overwhelmingly in a General Assembly. So I don't know that the governor's veto really makes all that much of a difference. And I wouldn't be surprised if she's kind of hoping it gets overridden because she will then at least she'll have vetoed it, which is going to bring the ire of the unions. But if it didn't actually go through, that's going to ease her rapprochement with them as she tries to get their support going into possibly a tough gubernatorial race. So the signs are all pointing that way. And it's a real shame. And hopefully mayors and the Providence Journal can get enough people incensed about it. I just don't know that people really understand what it means to them in practical terms.
I agree. And I think it just it ends up this is going to end up in court because the cities and towns, you simply cannot afford it. Warwick, to me, is exactly the case study of it. Instead of dealing with the reality that in this day and age, because this did stem from the rep in Warwick introduced it, they're having a bitter standoff between the teachers union, the superintendent, and the school committee. Instead of dealing with the reality that there are just less students, so you don't, number one, need as many schools, you don't need as many teachers, they couldn't come to agreement on that. Instead, their solution is going to be forever, it's going to be, you know, whenever the contract was signed, with as far as the number of students and everything else. And we know that that's just not the way it operates. I want to move on to the Providence Journal, Justin. Again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor of OceanStateCurrent.com. The Providence Journal right now is doing a terrific series. It's sad. It's heartbreaking. But these children that have been, you know, abused, neglected, even dying in the care of DCYF, and they're doing a pretty impressive series on it. Do you think this is one of those stories and issues that will stick to Governor Raimondo in her reelection, in her bid for reelection?
Well, I think it will, largely for the reason that at this point, this isn't sort of appearing as a single problem. She's been dogged with things that just haven't been working, whether you're talking UHIP or even the cooler and warmer fiasco with just something as simple as coming up with a slogan and advertising the state. So this is not a single issue that she can start saying, as she's trying to do, well, we're hiring more people, we're trying to fix it. This is now a gut-wrenching, very emotional symbol of the running inability to run or fix things. And if you look back to when she did have some success as a treasurer with the pension fund, I think what most people don't care about pensions. They don't know how they work. They just they hear big numbers on it and they get scared, but they hear that on lots of things. So I think a lot of what her success there was people seeing that she appeared to be, it was kind of a scheme, I thought, but appeared to be pushing back on what's actually hurting the state and what's actually causing the problems. And I don't see that happening in this instance. You mentioned the Providence Journal article. There was one, you could almost miss it if you blink, but there was one phrase in there saying part of the problem was just hiring incompetent people people who didn't have the credentials or the experience to do the jobs they were hired for in DCYF to run it. And that goes right to this sense that we need to really change the culture of government. And short of doing that in a big, you know, make America great again kind of a way, I don't know that she can get out from under this one because it does put such an image on what is now a running list of things that have gone wrong.
Hmm. I agree, and especially it's one of those things. It is kind of surprising because it doesn't kind of fit the mode, you know, for the person that's supposed to be the fixer, so to speak, and very in touch with social issues. And I know her staff has been very quick to, she's a mother. Can you imagine the field day the media would have if this stuff was going on under, say, you know, a Governor Kachiri or a Governor Allman, you know, an older white male Republican, that they would just dismiss as, like, you know, cold-blooded and cold-hearted, and how could he let this go on? This is going on under a, you know, very progressive first female governor. You would think that this would be one of those elements that would be a priority, but whatever has happened with DCYF, I just wonder if this is something that is relatable and that people will kind of stick, because to me, like, the cooler and warmer theme, that really seems to stick more than DCYF, that I think a lot of people may view as, you know, for better or worse, there's always been problems there. And I'm not using that as an excuse.
Oh, no. Well, clearly, one of the things about cooler and warmer is it, because it was, there was some branding in there, they had actually, you know, gotten halfway to their own problem, because people could make fun of it because it was already kind of catchy on by design. But another thing about it is it's not all that important. You know, so you feel like you can mock it, you can make up memes on,
yes,
on Facebook and Twitter, social media. This is very, very serious.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to see people joking about it. It's not going to become a thing people crack about, you know, at work. Oh, yeah, DCYF, ha, 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 children dying.
Sure.
That's not going to happen. So it's not going to be catchy like that. But I think these kind of things really do weigh on the minds of people and just set the tone of how you feel about how well government's doing and how well people can, people in charge are able to fix things. And you just don't get that sense, especially if she put out another slick video on the taxpayer dime talking about this issue, and you don't, we hired some new people. Well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, and she was very stilted. She did say, I'm a mother, and I'm trying to imagine the response had a Governor Kachiri come out in a similar situation and said, well, hey, look, I'm a father.
Hmm.
You know, yeah, that would have been mocked all around, I think.
Right.
But there was very little, genuine emotion in that video. You could tell she was reading off a script. And the most telling thing is to me was that she, when trying to state positives, she talked about essentially giveaways.
Yeah.
You know, like, we have higher minimum wage and we're paying our childcare workers more.
Good
well,
point.
You know, what needs to happen, whether it's her doing or not, because all of these problems are just long range culture of Rhode Island kind of problems. What she needs to come out and do is say, this is the structural problem of Rhode Island government. She has to identify that and then work to fix that. That's why I am doing X that's really radical and it's actually going to be more difficult than raising a minimum wage or hiring more public workers. There needs to be that thing, I think, for people to have real buy-in in a sense that she's trying to fix it. And even if she didn't, that's when people would say, well, this has been a long-range problem. Our government has a lot of problems, and she couldn't fix them all. That would be a tolerable outcome for her, I think, politically. But it doesn't happen if she's hedging around the edges and not really – and giving what feels like the same old, oh, we're going to hire more people. And what? You know, what,
yeah.
Identify the problem. Tell us what it is. You're supposed to be the financier, the person who knows how to get things done.
Yeah.
If you are, then do that. But she's really not conveying that message at all.
We're going to ask Justin to hold on just for a moment. We're going to come back to him in just a moment, folks. Again, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We're going to speak more with Justin Katz, managing editor of OceanStateCurrent.com. Now, coming up, we are going to talk about the Rhode Island Washington delegation in reaction to President Trump and DACA. And also, this PSOC thing certainly seems to be full speed ahead. But we'll talk to Justin about that and more. But I want to remind you, whenever you get behind the wheel, folks, you just never know that you could be in an accident. If that were to happen, pick up the phone and call West Fountain Auto Body today at 272-3340. Isn't it amazing? I mean, I saw an accident this morning. Now, look at it outside, folks. No rain, no snow, no ice. To me, it's just people not paying attention or texting and driving. Sometimes you do get a drunk driver. If you are in an accident, call Kenny and Patricia at West Fountain Auto Body, 272-3340. But call them first. They'll work for you, not the insurance company. West Fountain Auto Body, located 400 West Fountain Street in Providence. Think of this, since 1927. It's West Fountain Auto Body. Call them 272-3340. Whether it's a small dent or nearly total vehicle, you can rely on West Fountain Auto Body. 272-3340. It's John DePietro. We're going to come right back and talk to Justin Katz on the John DePietro Show.
After 48 years of coastal weather and many millions of vehicle crossings, we're making major road deck repairs to the Newport Pell Bridge. Diligent maintenance by the Turnpike and Bridge Authority has significantly extended the life of the original surface, but with safety as our top priority, we can't put this project off any longer. The deck project will resume September 19th, but don't let that stop you from visiting Aquidneck Island, as traffic delays are only during rush hours. Find more information at ritva.org.
At the United States Postal Service, we don't just carry your product to its destination. We deliver your business, representing you and all of your hard work with pride. It's almost as if you're the one showing up to the customer's door, greeting them with a smile. Because when you ship with the United States Postal Service, your business becomes our business. That's why we deliver more e-commerce packages to homes than anyone else in the country. The United States Postal Service. Priority, you.
Well, folks, you look outside, and what do you see? Well, look down in Florida, all the rain they've had. And let's face it, we've had a lot of rain this year. Outside in our area, you still see a lot of green, mold, mildew, algae. Now is the time to get rid of it and join the revolution and call Revolution Softwash at 680-6591. Revolution Softwash. They specialize in removal of algae, mold, mildew, bacteria, and moss from roofs and exterior surfaces. They have the biodegradable process. It's safe. It's effective. It's guaranteed. Join the revolution. Call Bill McMahon at Revolution Softwash today for your free, no-obligation consultation, 680-6591, 680-6591, Revolution Softwash. Now listen, with the cold weather coming months from now, it doesn't die off. It just lies dormant. If you have some of this mold, mildew, bacteria, algae, moss on your roof or deck or your patio, any outdoor surface, pick up the phone, get rid of it, with Revolution Softwash. They have a great website, revolutionsoftwash.com. It's easy to remember. Just say to yourself, I'm going to join the revolution. Join the revolution and get rid of the green stuff. Revolution Softwash. Call Bill McMahon today, the man with a plan, 680-6591, 680-6591.
Broadcasting from the far right on your AM dial at 1540, The John DePietro Show.
All right, we're back on this Monday. With us, folks, he is the managing editor from OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, so last week President Trump announced, or actually it was Attorney General Jeff Sessions that said that they were going to end, phase out the DACA program. President Trump basically said Congress has 6 months to come up with some kind of revision, something to make it permanent. It had to be done. You had a number of Republican attorney generals that were suing. They were going to be successful. You couldn't just leave it sitting there. But boy, the predictability from our Washington delegation. I mean, you would think that the president was breaking the law. It's un-American. It's hateful. It's evil. It's everything else. I'd love to get your reaction to our Washington delegation's reaction to the announcement from Jeff Sessions and President Trump.
Well, as one of their constituents, at least on paper, the thing I found most striking about it was just how extreme it is and how little room for compromise or working together with people or even goodwill toward people who oppose you on a particular policy, how little of that. It's cruel, it's un-American, it's shameful, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's this contrast in all of their statements, and they're all pretty brief, but they build this contrast up where on the one hand, you've got the applicants or the people who are here as part of the DACA program are all hardworking. They represent the spirit of America, all these glowing terms. And on the other hand, you've got hatred and racism and all that. And that's anybody who wants to have some control on immigration. And this in particular, this little piece of the immigration issue should be relatively easy to resolve, because they are kind of tough stories. If you know, the people who came here when they were young in the single digits and they're now in their 20s and they're at school or they're already working, or some of them started businesses, there's room here to build bridges. And instead, the statements we get are all just reinforcing this divisiveness. There's no attempt even to appeal to the other side and to say, hey, I understand that I get your concern about immigration in general, but this is a different situation. There's none of that. And that's what's really disappointing. And mostly what's disappointing about that is that these four politicians, even the ones who are considered relatively moderate, like Jack Reed, think that this is the message that will play in Rhode Island. And they're probably right as far as, you know, whose votes get counted in Rhode Island. But it'd be nicer to get the sense that they were all going to try to resolve actual issues and bring a compromise that balances the interests of different people and different citizens of America. You don't get that at all from them, though.
You know what? I agree with you, Justin. What also surprised me is I would think, to me, it's almost like the teenager complaining when the parent tosses them the keys to the car and say, all right, you drive. I mean, I would almost expect that, or I would have, that Congressman Cicilline or Senator Whitehouse would have been like, thank God. Thank God we're going to play a role, because President Obama did it by executive order. So for Trump to say, hey, Congress, now you get to work, I would think that it would have been a chance for Congressman Cicilline, Langevin, even Reid, Whitehouse for that matter, to say, this is great. We're going to be heavily engaged. We're going to show, you know, come up with something. Congress is going to work together. Something like that. It was almost like you'd never think that they were on the field part of the process. They are so used to attacking him that it's forever just like they're, you know, booing in the bleachers instead of, hey, this is terrific, and I've already made calls, and here's what we're going to propose, and here's what good legislation would look like. I don't hear any of that coming from our four in Washington.
Oh, yeah. You'd think at least there'd be some, you know, I'm confident we can work together and solve this problem. You know, at least the president didn't tell us not to do it, you know, something to that effect.
Yes.
But the reality is, you know, I'm sure they've already had out their round of fundraising emails and letters, and they're going to rake in some more hundreds of thousands of dollars from people who want this kind of a divisive message. And in the long run, having these sympathetic stories on the books and under executive order means that they're under threat at every election. They can turn and say, look at these people who will be deported if I'm not reelected. So in effect, it's not in their interest to solve this problem. I mean, they can maybe get some PR boost out of going out and saying, I helped to solve this problem. But in the long run, solving the problem does them more harm than not, which points to some structural problems we've got in the way we do government in the United States.
Folks, it's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We're speaking with the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. It's our friend Justin Katz. Now, Justin, I'm starting to see more and more pro New Paw Sox Stadium pop up. John Hazelman White, who I have a lot of respect for, very, very generous in this state. He's very generous with various, you know, nonprofit organizations. But someone penned an editorial to the Journal. They seem to be gearing up to have these meetings. Things are going to start to kick off. And again, to me, this is starting to, you know, as much as they're going to have these various hearings around the state, to me, this seems to have all the makings of already a done deal.
It does, although the one little bit of, as somebody who doesn't think it's a great idea, the one little bit of optimism I can find is I believe it was a Go Local Providence story out of Pawtucket, and the city council, one of them wanted to put in a resolution to support the deal, and it went down because,
yeah,
I guess the city council president doesn't like it. There was some local opposition gearing up to show up and hold signs and that sort of thing. The key issue, I think, that brought it down was the city council and others interested in Pawtucket mainly, they're going to want a state backstop so that they're not left with, I think their piece is supposed to be $15 million. That's a pretty big nut for them to have without backstopping by the state. At the same time, the state is not, that was one of the issues before. People spotted that and said, well, we're, in effect, we're covering Pawtucket anyway. so we'll be reliable for their piece. And that was, I think that was one of the things that threw a wrench in the machinery in the spring. So that could still come back to bite them. And if those protesters really were there and ready to start protesting in Pawtucket, we're going to have to wait to see the show hearings of the Senate Finance Committee, whether that carries on or whether how much of a battle it is between the union voices we've been talking about expecting and people who just oppose it. So there is that. There's still hope that it could be disrupted, but it is starting to have that feel like the pieces are coming together. And now by that, you're only really talking about a handful of the more powerful political figures in the state. Those are the pieces that matter in this kind of a deal. We'll just have to wait and see.
Thursday starts Senate Finance Committee, and to me, you know, it's very simple. The first one's important. It will be televised. You know, there's an element of whoever controls the microphone controls the conversation. If you're on the side of you want this and you want to build it, you got to every time there's somebody against it, you want a 2-to-1 type of strategy. So whoever's going to be able to sign up to speak, get there. You know, just start to go. There's going to be talking points, pep rally. Try to intimidate some people that otherwise might otherwise get up. And I do not think we're going to have the type of disruptive meetings that we had and saw 2 years ago, where these PawSox people going out and basically were really getting caught off guard. But I think Thursday is going to give us some indication of exactly how this is going to go. And let's face it, the first one probably will get the most media attention. I'm not saying the rest of them won't, but, you know, you got some pretty good political minds here. Guy Default, from what I understand, is a lobbyist for the PawSox. There's no one better at the theatrics of this type of thing. But I think Thursday night, how that goes is going to be give us some indication of exactly how the rest of these, quote, public hearings are going to go. And before I let you go, I am interested to get your thought that this was a piece that a lot of people probably escaped him. It was in Saturday's paper, but the Attorney General has ruled that the Rhode Island DOT must divulge the cost of these roadwork signs. And this comes after, I remember we had him on the program, and it was the man that basically was one of the people that was objecting to the tolls that we're going to put on the Susquehanna River Bridge. But as everyone knows, all over the state you have these different road signs, and they also bear Governor Raimondo's name, and they're popping up all over the place. And it is kind of crazy that the DOT would not even, Justin, divulge the cost of it. And now the Attorney General has come out because of this Portsmouth critic citizen and said, no, you do have to. I mean, where is the transparency? We're paying for it. It would seem like basic government. We have a right to know how much these signs cost. I mean, this crowd that talks about we want the public engaged and transparency and everything else, and then when they do this stunt of, to me, it is political signs of having your name all over the state, they want to hide behind it and say, no, you don't have a right to know how much these signs cost.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's one of the – a lot of these kind of loopholes – not really loopholes, these provisions in the law. So the Access to Public Records Act has exceptions, and one of them is anything that's a draft. And you can kind of understand, you know, if somebody's doodling on a pad, brainstorming some crazy things that they'll never do, but it's part of the thought process, you don't want to necessarily putting that out in the public, or they need to be able to have some ability to work. But when you put those in there, and everybody understands what it's for, and here's the Raimondo administration saying, well, technically, the spreadsheet of all of our payments is never done. So you could have this basically, by their argument, you could have major projects that are conceived, put together, and paid for without ever producing a, quote, document that the Republic has access to. And it was just so extraordinarily audacious that the Attorney General kind of had no choice, because otherwise, essentially, there would be no Access to Public Records Act anymore, because everything could be a draft. And unless you have to put a stamp on it that says this is no longer a draft, that's what it would be. But it does make you wonder what they could be trying to hide. And there are really only two possibilities I can see. Either there's something big here, like this is a big expense, or we're going to start, rather than just the expense of the sign, we're going to learn that, hey, it also costs X dollars to have 20 DOT workers standing around while two dug a hole to put the sign into the ground.
Yeah.
And that cost a whole lot of money. And once that ball starts rolling, it could get to be big. So that's one possibility. They're afraid of what we'll see. And the other is maybe not as bad, but it is also bad is if they're just so obsessive with the secrecy.
Yeah.
That they're just going to sit on this absurd claim that this is a draft document and over essentially nothing. They just want to deprive the governor's opposition of a talking point that she spent X dollars putting her name around the state. And either way, that doesn't look good. But definitely what we need are many more John Vitkoviches.
Yes.
That's the guy in Portsmouth. Who,
yes.
Out there who are, you know, and it doesn't take much if we all split up the work and all focus on one number, but you really have to persist with it. I mean, I'm waiting for information from the Raimondo administration about exceptions to time off for employees of the state. And it's been, they asked for a 20-day extension, and now it's been more than 20 days. You have to keep on these things, and that's what they tend to do, is they tend to wear down people who are just asking for information, and it takes people who are a bit more indefatigable, like John, to keep pushing. And so we need more people who are going to just say, you know what, I want to know what this number is, and then go after it. And if we can get that out, that kind of culture of asking for information, that would be a good turn of events there. But hopefully we'll see more of John, and he'll once he gets this information, he'll figure out some other number he's going to grab for and keep on like a pit bull.
I think just we'll leave it at this, but I think one of the things that the Raimondo administration's afraid of is, you know, if you live in Portsmouth, he just sees basically, you know, maybe the signs that are in Portsmouth or in that general area. And then if you live in Warwick, you just maybe those are the signs you notice in your particular area. But collectively, I mean, we really don't know how many full signs are all over the state and just how many there are. And I think that is the number that's going to really jump out at people because, you know, again, during the course of your daily travels, if you just see one or two of these signs in your community, what's the big deal? Just two signs. But then when you start to see that they're actually in every community and how many there are and then the full cost of it and how much it costs to put her name on it and everything else and the upkeep and you got to update them and, as you say, the dig the hole and put them in, that it's a much higher cost. Folks, he is the managing editor of OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, excellent as always, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks. Look forward to it. Have a great week.
All right. Folks, there it is. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. I want to remind you, JKL Engineering. Let JKL Engineering design and install a carrier Infinity system for your home or business today. These carrier systems have the highest rebates in the market. They're quiet. They're energy efficient. And you could save over 50% on your energy bill just by having JKL replace that old clunker. JKL Engineering, they specialize in complete commercial rooftop systems designed to ductwork, installation, and service. Replacements of these units can be done in a matter of hours, as well as the ductless foot systems. I want you to call JKL today for a free estimate. Now listen, whether it's your home or business, you should be nice and comfortable. And on top of that, these are a tremendous investment. And JKL is the best. Highest rebates in the market. They're quiet. These carrier systems, quiet, energy efficient. You could save over 50% on your energy bill just by having JKL replace the system you have. Factory authorized carrier, Navient dealer, installation and service license in Rhode Island and Massachusetts, an approved National Grid VPI installer, plus financing is available. Call JKL Engineering today at 351-7600. 351-7600. JKL Engineering. They're the best. Give them a call right now. Licensed in Rhode Island and Massachusetts. 351-7600. 351-7600 for JKL Engineering. It's John DePietro. A lot more ahead. 846-1028. Now, coming up, we will have Game of Phones. And then at 4 o'clock, we haven't talked to her in a little bit, but she was successful in her bid against the dancing cop. Amber Collins will join us live. It's all ahead. 846-1028. on the John DePietro Show.
Hi, this is Art Brody, hoping you'll join me Sunday mornings at 7 for Art & Company. Each week we'll feature a special guest to fill you in on everything from programs and services available to area seniors to what's going on in the Newport Faith community to fun things to do at Newport's Ballard Park. Don't miss an action-packed minute. Join us for Art & Company, Sunday mornings at 7 on AM 1540 WADK.
If you've been waiting all summer to hit the trails, then this sound is music to your ears. Right now at the Ski-Doo Yellow Tag Sales Event, you can save on select 2017 Ski-Doo sleds to the tune of up to $2,000. The beat goes on, but the deals won't last long. Get yours today. Visit your local Ski-Doo dealer for the Yellow Tag Sales Event. Offer ends soon. Restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Where you live, a New England home. Give it a look that's all its own. Garage Headquarters, 877-62-GARAGE.
Well, you know it, folks. There's got to be a leader. Hey, how many people down in Florida now wish that they had had an investment-grade door from Overhead Door? People of Florida wish that Overhead Door was down there. Think how lucky we are that the number one Overhead Door Authority is right here in your own backyard. Folks, go with the leader. Go with the best. Call them today, 877-62-GARAGE, Garage Headquarters. Remember, an investment-grade door looks better on your home, also improves the value of your home.
Garage Headquarters, 877-62-GARAGE.
It's simple. When you have more doors, more selection, toy boat, more selection, and on top of that, their goal is very simple. You can't buy a better door for a better price. Rhode Island and Massachusetts. When you've been in business longer, better technicians, more warehouses, more trucks on the road. Listen, for your home or business, in Rhode Island and southeastern Mass, when you want a door that matches the architecture of your home, call the original, the number one, Team Grace, since 1973, making your home great again. 877-62-GARAGE.
Garage Headquarters, 877-62-GARAGE.
He tells it like it is. He's John DePietro on 1540 WADK.
All right, and we're back on this Monday, September 11th. Good afternoon, everyone. It is John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. Here I am, afternoons 1 to 5, right here, right-hand side of the dial. And it's AM 1540, and it's WADK. We're going to bring you up to speed on some of the news of the day. One of the things is certainly coming out of Cranston. Channel 10 broke the story. I see Channel 12 has it now. I want to see if anybody has any audio as of yet. But the president of the Cranston Firefighters Union, the deputy chief, yeah, they do actually have it, in Cranston was arrested, Paul Valletta, by the Rhode Island State Police. Now, we're awaiting a statement from Mayor Fung. This guy's supposed to be the deputy fire chief in Cranston, and he was arrested for assault and battery over the course of the weekend.
Confirming Paul Valletta, seen in this video, who has worked with the Firefighters Union, has been arrested in connection with an incident at the Cranston Fire Department. Police say he was taken into custody around 2 Saturday afternoon and charged with assault and battery and disorderly conduct. He was arraigned at State Police Headquarters and released on personal recognizance. No word yet when he will be back in court.
Hmm. So that's the Channel 12 story. Now, I don't know if anybody's caught up. Well, NBC I-Team, Cranston deputy fire chief charged with assault. What is Mayor Fung going to say? We want to wait and see. Innocent until proven guilty. It is unusual. You got to admit that. Cranston's deputy fire chief, Paul Valletta, was confirm. Simple assault battery charges. Incident with another firefighter. He's also the union president. He was arraigned at headquarters, released on personal recognizance. Now, keep in mind, so something happened. He was arrested. Now, we'll see exactly how this plays out. Hello, hola, Speaker Fox, who's with us on Facebook Live. We'll see if we can get it going. Folks, if you'd like to watch us and listen on Facebook Live, it's John DePietro Show on Facebook, and then just click the like button, and then our it's brought to you by EliteWirelessRI.com. Sometimes we have some minor glitches, but we have our producer, Rob Bennett, and we'll see if we get everything rolling. Now, we are going to do Game of Phones next hour, bring us the latest, and it is big because it's a big day for Apple tomorrow, and then we'll also, we're planning on right now speaking with Amber Collins, who is the individual that she was the one that objected to our friend Tony Lepore, the dancing cop. And very unfortunate for Tony, she was successful in having him removed from that parade, so the firefighters parade. And so we're going to talk to her coming up at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Now, there's some other news on this. This is a big week as far as exactly what's going to happen at the State House with those hearings. Make no mistake about it. What we're going to find out, hello there, Armando, we're going to find out what's going to happen with these PawSox hearings. I don't think it's going to go the way it went 2 years ago, which is a lot of the anti-stadium people showed up, and they were very, very vocal and disruptive, and they threw the PawSox representative off their game. I don't see. This Thursday will be the first indication of how it's going to go. And this Thursday certainly sounds as if it's going to be well organized, labor is going to be involved, and remember, it's all about whoever controls the microphone, right? Whoever controls the microphone will dictate how that story is going to play out. And I believe that they're going to be prepared for every speaker against it. They'll have two or three in favor of it, regardless of how you feel about it. But Thursday is going to give us some indication, and Thursday will get the most exposure, and then who knows how some of these other, quote, public hearings are going to play out around the state. They are going to then do this as a roadshow. So I believe it's six different hearings, public hearings, supposedly, that they're going to have, and then we're going to find out. Hey, how about the controversy regarding Miss America and President Trump? Miss America was on last night. Did you see that? I don't know if people saw it. A lot of people watching the Cowboys game with the Giants, or they were watching just some of the coverage of the hurricane. But the questions at Miss America were so anti-President Trump, it wasn't even funny. And the new Miss America who went to Brown took a slam at President Trump that's generating some controversy today. Let's hear a little bit of this from Sherry Preston.
During your onstage interview, 23-year-old Miss North Dakota Kara Mund drew a question on climate change. She was asked for her opinion on President Trump's decision to pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement and said it was a mistake.
There is evidence that climate change is existing. So whether you believe it or not, we need to be at that table. And I think it's just a bad decision on behalf of the United States.
After winning the crown in Atlantic City, Munn says she stands by her view and isn't worried about any blowback from the president. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
You know, nor should she be. But some of the questions were, okay, thank you, Gordon. Some of the questions were pretty biased towards President Trump regarding just the way they were posed to the contestants, and it was very, very political. Just to give you an idea of the way some of the questions were posed to some of them, asking Miss Missouri about the allegations. Can you imagine last night the judge, Jordan Sparks, asked Miss Missouri about the allegation of Russian influence? And she said there are multiple investigations whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. Well, did they? You're the jury. Guilty or innocent, please explain your verdict. That was a question last night during, Kruner at Large joins us, during the Miss America pageant. For the record, the contestant said innocent. Another judge, Maria Minos, I think she was on one of the entertainment shows, asked the winner, about, as you just heard, climate change, and then the crowd, you know, reacted with it. Maybe that question actually won it for her. Another judge asked Miss New Jersey about racism. A recent poll found slightly over half Americans favored leaving Confederate statues in place. Others want them removed. Keep them or get rid of them. What's your vote and why? And then there were a couple more. It was definitely a an anti-Trump situation. Let's see. Then there was this. Miss Texas said, I think that the white supremacist issue was very obvious. It was a terrorist attack, and I think President Trump should have made a statement earlier addressing that fact, making sure all Americans feel safe in the country. That's the number one issue, right? Right now. That's the number one issue. And, folks, it was also the horrendous, horrible story that happened to Eric Boland, very, very popular, thank you, Rob, on Fox News. Not only did he lose his job and his show from the specialists on Fox, but on top of that, it's so odd, his 19-year-old son, who's in college in Colorado, there's various different reports. Eric Boland took to Twitter and said that police will have to wait for the autopsy. Police were saying it wasn't self-inflicted. But then I heard a report this morning that his 19-year-old son overdosed in some way. I mean, it's just unimaginable, number one, that the circumstances of which he lost his job. But then on top of that, your 19-year-old, seemingly 19-year-old college freshman, takes his own life. I also saw one report had that he was a freshman. Another report had he was a sophomore. Both said that he was very, very tight with the father. The son had a different last name, so I'm not sure if he's still married or he remarried or exactly what the situation is. But, I mean, I thought the guy was – he used to fill in for O'Reilly, for crying out loud, Eric Boland. So Friday night he found out that he was out at Fox permanently, and then the son, 19-year-old son, somehow died Friday night into Saturday. Folks, it's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. Listen, with this nice weather, and it's going to be nice all week, this is a perfect example of reason to get out to Sam's Inn. Sam's Inn, located West Shore Road in Warwick, 2227 West Shore Road in Warwick. It's Sam's Inn. Sam Curry has done it again at Sam's Inn. What a great staff they have. Kimberly, Pam, everyone that works there. You can find them online at samsinnri.com. But it's Sam's Inn. Why do people love it? Well, every meal cooked to order. At Sam's Inn in Warwick on West Shore Road, the daily lunch special is just $6.95. Now, when you walk in, to the left is the lounge. They have a lot of live entertainment. To the right is the dining room. They also have a private party room at Sam's Inn. And remember, free salad bar with any entree at Sam's Inn. I have a friend. He texts me every time. He's at Sam's Inn five times a week. He loves it so much. And with good reason. It's delicious food, very reasonable prices. Try the Baked Stuffed Quahogs or the Clams Casino. Or maybe you just want to try the Sam Burger or the Texan. They also have ravioli with meatballs, delicious steaks. On top of that, you're going to love the broiled sea scallops. They'll melt in your mouth. The broiled swordfish or the linguine with clam sauce. Sam's Inn. Daily lunch special, $6.95. Every meal is cooked to order at Sam's Inn. And free salad bar with any entree. Call them 737-6073. Sam Curry has done it again at Sam's Inn, located 2227 West Shore Road in Warwick. I'll see you for a great meal. And believe me, they have a good crowd there, seven nights a week at Sam's Inn. All right, it's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. Now, coming up, we're going to bring you up to speed. It is a big week. A couple of things are happening at the Rhode Island State House. We're going to tell you about that. It's also an interesting story, controversy regarding casting of a play in Boston. I'm going to touch on that story I saw in the Boston Globe. And then more of your phone calls at 846-1028 on this anniversary of September 11th. It's John DePietro. Stay with us.